Next is item L. It is not an action item. This is trial court's impact to trial court funding under the workload-based allocation and funding methodology. We welcome Mr. Jake Chatters, Executive Officer, Superior Court of California, County of Placer, future Judicial Council member starting in September, Mr. Zlatko Theodorovich, Finance, and Mr. Colin Simpson, Finance. Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Justice and members of the Council. Good morning. As you will enjoy, we are now at about 11:15 this morning, and so before lunch, we are going to take on the algebra portion of the class today. So we do have three items, items L, M, and N, and we'll start with L, obviously. This is not an action item, as the Chief Justice just mentioned. It is instead an update on the current status of the workload-based assessment and funding methodology, or WAFM. As you're aware, the Judicial Council adopted the funding model in April of 2013 and used the model to allocate general court operations funding in fiscal year 13-14 and again in the current year 14-15. The model is intended to be phased in over the next three fiscal years, as is outlined in the materials. As you may recall, about this time last year, we did come to you with adjustments to the underlying model, which included adding in the smallest of our courts and making some adjustments for the smaller courts that was necessary in order to establish a funding floor for those courts and make some technical adjustments to what's called the FTE allotment for those courts with a very low BLS factor. And so, as Lucko reminds me, so BLS stands for the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and that factor in the model compares the average government, local government salary in each county in California to a statewide average. And so a number of over one indicates that the local government in that jurisdiction pays higher than the state average, and a value of less than one indicates the local government tends to pay less than the state average to their government employees. This year, we are not recommending any changes to the underlying funding model. While work continues on what we termed to begin with the parking lot items from the initial development, none of those resulted in the need to modify the components of the model this year, although it is updated for filings. There's been an update on 1058, updates based on the court 7A, which for those that don't know, the 7A outlines each of the positions in each court, including the salary and benefit information. Going forward into next year, there are six items on the methodology, which will come up as part of the work plan for the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, and they'll be discussed at a later time. So I do want to jump, if we can, in your materials to a diagram that is up on the screen in front of us, but in your materials, it is located on page 7 of the materials for item L. And this chart is showing what is happening to all of the courts under the funding model. So on the far left of that chart, which is very small for those in the audience or looking online, so hopefully you have the materials in front of you. But beginning on the left side, these are all the courts that are not subject to the funding floor because they look very different. There is an additional slide for those. What this is intended to show is that when we started this process 3 years ago, there was a very large divergence between the court's actual funding and where compared to the funding need between courts. So I'm going to use this chart, and I'm going to try and guess at a couple courts. So you'll see that there's a large variance going into, or in the current year in 14-15, of the court on the bottom, which indicates it's about 51-52% of its funding need, versus the court on the top, which is showing it's just about 100% of its funding need. So the intention, again, of the funding model is to put us all on general equal footing. Unfortunately, in this context, as you see lines going down, that equal footing is at roughly 71% of our funding need. So what is occurring is some courts are coming down towards that average funding level of 71%, and other courts are coming up from maybe 50% to somewhere around 70%. So as you heard this morning, there were three presentations, as I recall, from Judicial Council members on their visits to courts. As it happens, all three of those courts are courts that were above the average of 70% and therefore are being brought down to an average that is below 100% or full funding for those courts. That just happened to be what was presented today, but I put that as a contrast to there are courts that weren't mentioned this morning that are coming up. So the intent of the model, again, is to provide equal funding. Ideally, that would be 100% funding. Unfortunately, it's 70% funding, which does mean some courts are being brought down to a level that makes it very difficult for them to operate. So there is a chart that I want to touch base on that's two pages down, so it would be starting on page 9. And what this chart shows is what is happening in real terms and real amounts, I think we have it to display, but for each of the courts. And so it displays the total net change for courts, all 58 of them, since the funding model was implemented. And so if you look at columns F through H, it's going to show either a negative number or a positive. And those that are negative means that those courts did have, over the course of the last several years, a truly net negative impact on their funding. So this is inclusive of both benefits increases for retirement and healthcare, and with the changes that are being made under the funding model. I'll note that the first three on that list, Alpine, Sierra, and MODOC, are all subject to the funding floor, and this chart does not take into consideration the funding floor. So while it does show that those courts have a negative number, that money is actually provided back to them to the funding floor. So just want to caution that. And there are a few others also there near the top. Maybe Colin can correct me, by the Plumas is also approaching the funding floor, so that raw number may not hold in future years. What this is showing, that without the funding floor, those first set of courts would be receiving a net negative in their allocation compared to when the model began and their base funding in 13 and 14. While those where you see non-shaded have seen a net increase, even if their base funding was reduced. So because we are receiving additional funds for both benefits and retirement, their net number may be growing. That does mean that that increase that they receive for benefits and retirement may not be keeping pace with all of their costs as a result of the decline in base funding. So, although we have quite a bit of time, I think the report otherwise outlines the progress of the model moving forward, and I'll just open it to any questions.
Justice Hull, and then Judge Rosenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chatters. I, as you heard earlier today, I am liaison to Glenn County, and I mentioned some of their concerns. After I prepared my report, I did receive an email from Mr. Swift, the court executive officer there, and I certainly don't understand even close the nuances of the WAFM and the funding. We all understand it in general terms, and so what I'd like to do is just read the essence of his email, not asking for any relief or any action whatsoever, but just noting a concern that he states. He said, I find WAFM very confusing, so you may want to confirm with Judicial Council staff, but as I understand it, Glenn has a reallocation ratio of 77%, which means that when historical funding is reallocated, we lose 33 cents for every dollar reallocated. As the statewide reallocation of historical funding approaches 50%, the cumulative negative effect of WAFM increases because more historical funding is subject to reallocation. The projected five-year cumulative impact of WAFM will be a net increase in our baseline funding of approximately $22,000. He notes parenthetically, since we qualify for floor funding, the actual cumulative impact will not be quite that small. He goes on, I think the bottom line is that WAFM has impacted our ability to develop and expand services and will also make it difficult to recruit and retain qualified staff. I know that we are not alone in this regard and it was necessary to move away from the historical funding model for trial courts. However, the impact of WAFM on small courts, that is cluster one courts, seems disproportionately negative. No cluster one court has a reallocation ratio of over 100%. And only two have a reallocation ratio over 90%. The mix of, quote, donor and donee courts among the other clusters seems more evenly distributed. For example, cluster four courts were Orange, San Diego, and Santa Clara. They fell below 100%, and Los Angeles, Riverside, and San Bernardino are above 100%. He simply concludes saying, unfortunately, I have no explanation for this apparent anomaly. He simply wanted me to make note of that for whatever purpose that might be here today. Thank you.
Thank you. Judge Rosenberg?
Just had a question. The three of you sitting up there are like rocket scientists on this subject of WAFM, so I want to just ask you. I heard today, I think it may have been Justice Hull who mentioned it, that trials are not part of the WAFM workload assessment methodology. Is that accurate?
So the underlying resource allocation study, so the RAS model that calculates the FTE need, does not, it is based on filings, and so it attributes a per minute amount per filing. That per minute amount does take into consideration trials. That does include the amount of time that was spent by the courts that participated in the study on trials during the study period. So it is correct that if you have a court that is seeing a large increase or decrease in their trial rates, you know, the funding model does not adjust up or down for that at a local level. But the model itself does take into consideration an expectation that the overall percentage of trials is generally consistent.
I understand. Thank you for that explanation. But I suggest that that is one area that you should look at when you're tweaking the model, because we've heard that there are courts that have remarkably dissimilar years based on factors not completely in their control, such as new DA is elected and suddenly the number of trials may double, affecting clearly workload. So you should take a look at that. It may need to be tweaked or adjusted. The calculations of time spent varies tremendously, depending if you're in one case in a trial that takes you 12 days versus 50 cases that are handled in a morning, reaching a resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. Judge McCabe.
Well, and on the converse side, because there's always, as Paul Harding would say, the rest of the story, that the WAFM is built on a workload basis. And so what you're in essence asking is that there be an additional consideration for what's already being taken into consideration. The baseline is workload. And in Glenn's instance, there was alluded to a phenomena that was occurring there that is going to change the filings, which will change their workload, which will change their WAFM over time. So unfortunately, they have the displeasure of being at a time when filings were low for reasons outside that court's control. But those circumstances have now changed, and so I expect over the next few years, as everything spikes, that will change as well. I, along with a number of others around the table here, were on the original WAFM committee, and we spent an extraordinary amount of time trying to figure out how to bring parity to the funding system and not give incentives to game the system. And so how do you do that? And again, we spent a lot of time fighting with each other about trying to standardize this through workload, because workload really is the ultimate basis for the funding. And because there are peaks and valleys in trials and even in courts, they're not standardized. They're not the same from year to year. So what does that do? Does that encourage courts? Then, well, we're going to have more trials. You know, I'm going to reject that. And so that was part of the thinking, and I think Judge Rosenberg is entitled to hear some of that thinking in the committee's original discussions. And so I'm leery of looking at and providing more weight to something that's already been given weight in the first instance. But I do recognize there are anomalies, particularly the cluster ones, which was dealt with the flooring, that still need to be looked at, and they're going through those parking lots. Could I be wrong on the analysis for the trial? Yeah, I admit that. But my instinct is, as I look through this, is right now I think that's going in the wrong direction. I think we ought to be looking at other external factors other than giving double weight or additional weight to things that are already being taken into consideration. So my two cents.
Thank you. Judge Rosenberg.
If I may very briefly respond, don't get me wrong. I completely support the WAFA model. The workload-based model makes all the sense in the world. I'm just saying that it really can't be a static thing. It needs to be looked at and tweaked and adjusted as we learn more, as things do change. We can't lock in something that might be quite different 5 years from now based on workload.
Thank you. Commissioner Gunn and Judge Weber, did I see your hand up?
Is the Waffham and Ross models formulas are they going to be tweaked or changed so you could drive a truck through them or reevaluated at any time in the future? Is there an ongoing process to revisit them?
So yes, so the resource allocation study itself, which is the start of the whole model,
right,
and is what estimates what the workload is, looks like. The Workload Assessment Advisory Committee has on their work plan for the coming fiscal year to update that model. And so they're currently building that work plan, identifying the courts that will participate in the sampling program to look at the number of minutes per case to confirm that those are still accurate. And that is intended, I should remember how often,
5 years?
To be updated every 5 years so that the underlying value is adjusted for changes in Proposition 47, which may change how we're handling cases in criminal misdemeanor or felony cases, to get those captured every 5 years so we're not constantly updating it, but there is some degree of stability, but that it still does address changes in technology or changes in the law that take more or less time in order to accomplish the task. So that's every 5 years, and that embarks this fall. I mean, they're already doing the work plan now.
And how many courts are involved in this study?
So far. About 12.
12 out of 58? And that's going to establish the base for the application of Waffham.
Correct. That is what it then establishes the minutes that are allowed per case, or identified per case, not allowed, but identified per case on average. And again, that's an average. So, one case that gets filed and is immediately dismissed the next day is a filing. And the case that goes on and has 85 volumes and takes 7 weeks of trial.
It's averaged to 3.5 weeks. I understand.
Yeah.
Those two cases. The courts, do they volunteer for this? How are the 12 courts picked?
So the courts are a volunteer, and then from that set of volunteers, I'm looking to Leah because she may be able to answer that question better than I can. But while she's walking up, let me answer the second part of your question about the funding model itself.
Sure.
So we have the resource allocation study component, which then produces a number of staff, or FTE number, which is not actual staff, but number of FTE. Then the workload model takes that and turns it into dollars. And so that is looked at every year. There's a work plan for items to continue to look at. When the model was developed in 2013, there were some items that were too complex to address in the first run of that. And that is being reviewed each year. So there were two items this year. One was looking at retirement benefits, which we'll talk about as a later item today. And then dependency court appointed counsel was also reviewed by that group, which the council took action on at a prior meeting. There's a list of probably too many items for next year, unfortunately, but I think there's 6 items currently on that list. I have a feeling it's going to grow to a 7th. That'll need to be reviewed. That also try and look at the model itself and identify anything that needs to be adjusted or wasn't taken into consideration originally because it was a special funding source or some complicated item that has multiple funding sources. And so those will be dealt with this coming year. Similarly, on the BLS factor that has been raised certainly by Glenn and others, that is something that the group itself, through the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, can open up and look at again to identify is there a different way to address that. And that will be a clarification I'll make in a moment, but I just want to let Leah answer your question on the RAS.
No, you were doing very well, but I felt bad stage whispering from the back. So, we currently have about 12 courts recruited. We're still, the recruitment of courts to participate is not concluded, but we have commitments from courts throughout the state. Los Angeles has committed, Orange, San Diego. Many of the courts that Placer has agreed to participate, San Bernardino, Riverside. I know I'm going to forget several, Solano, Fresno. We go first to many of the courts that participated in the last time the study was updated. We're very interested in seeing how things have changed in the 5 years since we did the study. So it's important to us to get many courts who participated the last time around, but we've also tried to expand our pool. We look to make sure that we include courts of all sizes, of all levels of judicial resources and staff resources, courts from different geographical areas. While initially we rely on courts to volunteer to participate, we do end up making some calls and asking for other courts to participate to round our sample out.
So if a court like Glenn that has a high percentage of trials in the criminal sector, the criminal division, they really, if they want that factored into this, they really need to step up and volunteer to participate in the RAS study.
Right, and Glenn did participate in the last study, oh, okay. So it would be good to have the court participate again.
Okay.
But absolutely, things because of that trial rate, and I had spoken in the past with Janelle about this issue, and she'd been concerned about seeing that trend, and that's one of the reasons why we feel like the updates every 5 years are important, so that we're capturing those changes and transitions.
Okay.
Thank you, Judge Weber.
And I apologize for the basic questions, but
never apologize for questions here. Never.
That was the intent of this presentation, because we do know that there are new members, and there's time lapse, and it was good to sort of, especially somebody having new changes, to refresh, you know, folks' understanding of the program.
I think we all of us here always learn something new, whatever it might be in the development and the complication of WAFM. Judge Weber.
Thank you, Chief. Just to follow up on Judge McCabe and Judge Rosenberg's comments, and it sounds like this will be taken into account in the analysis, but what we're seeing in San Diego County, the second largest trial court, in looking at the first 5 months of 2015 versus the first 5 months of 2014 post Prop 47, we have over a 30% increase in misdemeanor trials, but we do not have a corresponding 30% decrease in felony trials. And we're looking at that issue, and we're seeing that it's just a lot harder to negotiate these misdemeanors now. And I know many courts around the state are seeing this same issue. Drug courts are not getting as many folks to sign up. Prop 36, because most defendants realize at a misdemeanor level they're not going to get custody time in any event. So the whole dynamic of trials in our county is seeing a little different flow to it, and we are probably just going to be doing a lot more jury trials on the criminal side in 2015. So I'm just hoping that that will be taken into account as we go forward, and perhaps that's going to level out. Most of these changes in the law, dramatic changes like this, we all know it works cyclically. But for right now, at least, there's a dramatic impact in some of the trial courts in terms of how these criminal cases are going out through the system.
Thank you, Judge McCabe. And then I want to wrap, if we can, because we have two action items next. So please, okay. Judge McCabe.
Yeah, and quickly, and I'm not on the panel, but excuse me for interjecting myself into this discussion as if I were. The bulk of the problem, particularly for those donor courts such as San Diego, is that the reinvestment in the branch didn't occur as fast as we would hoped it had. That's the ultimate problem. If it had, we wouldn't be here talking about this. Everybody would be fully funded, we'd have what we need, and we could go on. But the bottom line is we did a five-year phase-in, and at 50%, hoping that their economy would be able to pick up and rev up and that there would be an investment back into the branch. And then with that, it could smoothly transition to the new funding system and that everybody would receive optimal funding instead of, based on the old RAS, average. And it didn't occur. And so from a practical standpoint, that's why we're having these discussions. And we're having them at the presiding judge level. I'm sure they're having them at the CEO level, because those courts that are getting hit, it's devastating. And we've seen the numbers from San Diego and Orange and Santa Clara and on, and it's frightening. It is frightening of what you folks are dealing with. And so that's the root problem. And it, there's a reluctance to manipulate the formula to adjust for the lack of money. On the other hand, because we're trying to create that parity. And how do you create that consistent parity? But a huge factor is the funding, and we don't have that, and that's what complicates things. So I'm just throwing that in there so you kind of get a feel for what we're dealing with, at least at the PJ and CEO level. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. I'm going to invite you to move to item M, an action item.
Thank you, Chief. So I did fail to mention in the last item that I am here presenting on behalf of Judge Lori Earle, who is the chair of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, who was unfortunately unable to attend.